Hi, listening friend. Welcome to the Monday edition of Mark and Friends. It's June 17th, 2013. Yay, dads. I hope you had a great Father's Day yesterday or a Father's Day weekend where you were treated with lots of love, care, compassion, tenderness. Maybe you got some special gifts or unique treatment around the homestead. But men, you play a crucial role in building society and mirroring to a hurting world kingdom principles and hopefully being that ambassador for the Lord Jesus Christ. So we here at Great News Radio cheer you on, count on you to be that effective witness to this hurting world, and we'll keep you prayed up. Well, a great dad that I got to spend time with yesterday was Marlon Livingston. He's the head honcho, CEO of the Cunningham Children's Home. I think we interviewed him sometime last year. Great faith story, a real passion for kids, and has a real ministry heart to reach out to all the children and the staff over at the Cunningham Children's Home in Urbana. Well, he and his wife Denise came out to the homestead here, and they had a flotilla going. They borrowed three of my kayaks and did almost a three-hour float downstream, and I met up with them later using their Jeep and a trailer they borrowed to pack up the canoe and three kayaks. But it was a great time. Marlon's a great dad, and a shout-out for Denise, who's a fantastic wife, mother, and hard worker herself. And if you want to see a fun picture of the whole family in their flotilla on the Sangamon River, stop by my Facebook page, Mark Burns, and you'll see a photo of them. Also, you're going to see the book cover, An Unhurried Life, by Alan Fadling, and we'll talk to him and talk about his book in just a minute. But I'll first begin with a reading from Psalm 62, verses 1 and 2. My soul finds rest in God alone. My salvation comes from Him. He alone is my rock and my salvation. He is my fortress. I will never be shaken. These verses were favorites of our special guest, Alan Fadling. And I already know, Alan, this is going to probably be 2 days worth of broadcast because I so love your book, An Unhurried Life, Following Jesus's Rhythm of Work and Rest. In fact, I did a posting a week or two back. I was on my hammock, on my deck, and I had the book near my side, my Gatorade, my dog was in the background, and I was literally soaking in many of the principles. I love this book. I can't wait for our listeners over the next few days to get introduced to you and this book and all the material that I am learning and gleaning from it. But before I get into introducing you, I want to read something in the very first chapter, your very first paragraph, and then I want you to comment to a very important question I have for you. So welcome to the Monday edition of Mark and Friends.
Thanks, Mark. I'm looking forward to some unhurried moments together.
Yes, this book, the first chapter is called A Frantic Life, and it begins with, I'm a recovering speed addict. And I don't mean the drug. I'm talking about the inner pace of my life. I always seemed to be in a hurry. I was the guy who looked for the fastest moving lane on the freeway, the shortest checkout line at the grocery store, and the quickest way to finish a job. It's probably pathological, but like you, I also live in a hurried culture. I'm not the only one trying to get there more quickly and do things faster. In fact, there is little incentive out there to slow down, and the pace in the church doesn't seem all that different from the pace in the world around us. Well, Alan, the question that I have for you, when did God tell you to write this book for me?
Well, that's a great question. Oh, gosh. Well, you know, some have asked, you know, the story of the book, and in some ways it's a 20-year story, beginning with the paragraph you just read and just some awakenings that I had as a 20-something pastor. And then more recently, because so much of my work is with Christian leaders in churches and parachurch organizations, mission, or a lot of organizations, my conviction about this need grew and grew. And then finally, about 3 years ago, I sat down and I decided, instead of being the guy who said, you know, someday I should write a book, I just made a decision that this was the time. I felt it was an invitation from Jesus. And really, a couple things provoked that decision especially. I heard Dallas Willard say that if he had one word to describe Jesus, the word he'd choose, and a lot went through my mind, but the word he'd choose was relaxed. And I remember hearing that word and thinking, really? relaxed? You got one word, and that's the one you're going to use? And I realized that that word exposed an inner drivenness and hurry that I began to realize was so unlike Jesus. And so it was that idea that became one of the seeds for a number of days retreat where I simply read the Gospels with that question in mind. Is Jesus really relaxed? And as I wrestled with that question and read the Gospels over and over and over, I began to come to the conclusion that he was indeed relaxed. And then this idea of unhurried began to come into focus for me.
Yeah, as I read that in your opening comments in this book, I'm like, I've never thought of Jesus in those terms, but it's so true and indicative of his life. He was never in a hurry. He always did things at a pace that was caring and sensitive and compassionate and loving, and he had his priorities always in line. He followed Father God's will at all times, and I really started, as I was gleaning truths out of this book and relaxing, I'm thinking, I love this author. I got to get him on the phone. In fact, I'm only halfway through the book, but I didn't want to miss the opportunity to get you. And so I'm looking forward to finishing this. But if you looked at my copy right now, you would see post-it notes on a number of pages. You would see underlines. You would see asterisks to the side. Sometimes I do like a asterisk rating system, 1, 2, or 3. 3 means, oh, it's perfect. A bunch of 3s that maybe we'll talk about today and tomorrow. But I want to share a little of some of your background story and some of the work you're doing, as you're mentioning, with the journey and with leaders. You got your Doctor of Divinity at Fuller Theological Seminary, and you're currently the executive director of The Journey, a ministry of the Leadership Institute in Orange County, California, training Christian leaders to integrate spiritual formation and leadership development. So that's what you're talking about. Is there a website, or how would that apply to some of our listeners? Would that be something they would sign up for or find out more about, or have you come in and do a training at their church? So what does this institute do?
Yeah, well, thank you for asking. Well, one, my degree at Fuller was a master's degree.
Okay.
And the Leadership Institute really was birthed about the same time I was finishing that degree at Fuller Seminary. And it was formed originally out of some research that was done among pastors, really mostly college ministry pastors in Southern California. And the research was about what did these pastors feel contributed the most to their leadership influence, impact, fruitfulness, that sort of thing. And so one of the questions asked was, if you were to rank these factors as to which contributes most to your fruitfulness, your influence, your impact as a leader, what's the most impactful, and then go from there. And in the list were things like your education, your personality, your communication abilities, your organizational abilities, your position in an organization, all these different sorts of factors. And then somewhere in the list was simply prayer. Your life of prayer. And they were to rank them, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, et cetera. And what was striking in the research was that no one listed prayer up in the top 2 or 3. And to be fair, I don't think you'd say that this was a group of college pastors who never prayed. It's just that what we began to realize is that, at least in this particular group, they didn't see a connection between praying and leading. We came to find that praying was something that they did as a person, that many of them were deepening their relationship with God, but that when it came to step into the places of leadership, they sort of put on a different set of skills and a different way of thinking. And so the very first thing the Leadership Institute did was produce a seminary course on college ministry that put about a third of the hours into actually engaging in spiritual practices like solitude and silence, like reflecting on and meditating on Scripture, like being in community, not talking about it, reading about it, lecturing about it, writing papers about it, taking tests on it, but simply doing it. And that's been an insight that's been very, very valuable to us over the last 25 years. So often we teach people to do things, even spiritual practices, and then we hope they'll figure out how to do it when they get home. We've just found building in space right in the midst to try these things on has been a very impactful practice.
And I think when you were in our neck of the woods for an Urbana conference, I think during Urbana 87 and Urbana 90, there was a speaker that talked about prayer, and that was kind of a springboard into some of your learning and growth with your walk with the Lord, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. In fact, you know, what's interesting is, though I know there were some really good speakers at 90 in particular, the moment that I mentioned in the book is actually one of those little transitional moments where someone up front was leading perhaps a 5 or 10 minute moment of prayer. It wasn't even a major element of that particular session. And what we were given was simply about 5 or maybe 10 minutes to be quiet. And so we're in this assembly hall, and there are, you know, 18,000 people being quiet. I'll tell you, that makes an impression on you. Mm. And in that quiet moment, my wife and I both had what we would now call a vision. And the funny thing is, our theological orientation sort of was such that we didn't think such things happened to people. So it came as quite a shock when it happened to us. And it was really a vision of expanded influence and being a late 20s, you know, mover, shaker, leader. At least that's how I saw myself. My immediate response was to say, great, okay, how are we going to make this vision happen? I remember talking to a mentor of mine, Chuck Miller, and Chuck said, that's very exciting, but you might want to let God season you a bit. I was in such a hurry to make this thing happen, I didn't realize that maybe this vision was going to be more about who God was making me first before it became something that I was actually involved in as a ministry.
Yeah, I wrote down a quote from your book that I so love, much activity without much abiding. And that's kind of what you're saying. Sometimes we want to rush along or move forward or get impulsive on something that we feel is of God and would be God honoring, but we're not abiding in Him, resting in Him, waiting on Him.
Yeah, that's well said. And I just found that at least at that time when I came across these men, in this case it was four men who founded our ministry, the Leadership Institute, I realized I was so busy with the work of God, I didn't have very much time for the face of God, for the presence of God. That was not good, and I was really beginning to burn out even in my late 20s.
Well, you mentioned Jem at this Urbana conference in the past. How long have you been married, and does she live out her name as being your Jem?
You know what? Yeah. Well, we've been married this last month. We celebrated 28 years, and I've often said that her name is her personality and her character. She really is a Jem. You know, in the sense that the book starts, I am a recovering speed addict. I don't think that's a confession she would need to make. I've probably learned at least as much about living a less hurried life from her as I have from anyone. She's naturally, or at least God-given character. Her character is to be unhurried with people and to be attentive to God's voice. So, yeah, we've shared this journey together all along the way, which has been a great gift.
And I see you have three sons, and what are their ages?
Yeah. Our three guys are 15, 17, and 20. We just stepped out of the three teenagers neighborhood a little while back.
I also see that you're a certified spiritual director. What does that entail?
Well, it sounds pretty impressive, but, you know, really the spiritual director role is, at least as I practice it, and is that I'll meet with, in my case, mostly pastors and Christian leaders, maybe an hour a month, just to sit together and talk about our relationship with God. I'll listen to what's happening in their relationship with God. Where are they sensing God's grace meeting them? Where are they finding it a struggle to respond to God's grace? So it's really a relationship whose sole focus is to help a person, help another person deepen their conversational relationship with God. And so unlike, you know, counseling, which is often focused on something that needs to be resolved, perhaps, or healed or solved, spiritual direction relationship is really more trying to focus on spiritual health and deepening of relationship with God.
Now, how does someone get in touch with you for the Leadership Institute, or maybe they want to talk through some spiritual things, or I don't know if you do a lot of your work over the phone or you come and do visits, but how do they get in touch with the Leadership Institute? Is there a website or phone number or in touch with you?
Yeah, thanks. Well, probably the easiest way to get a hold of us here at the Leadership Institute would be our website, which would be spiritualleadership.com. That's the easiest one we find to remember. And we have a team of people who serve in a lot of different ways to help leaders both in their life with God, but also in how to lead from that place so that instead of being the person who may or may not have a warm and rich personal relationship with God, but that would also become the soil out of which they live as a pastor or as a missionary or just as a person in business wanting to do that business more Christianly.
Mm-hmm. I see you also teach courses at Hope International University. You're currently a part of a planning team for a new church called The Following in Orange County, California. So what do you do in your spare time?
Well, I try to live unhurried. You know, the ironies just pile up when you write a book on an unhurried life, and of course trying to be in recovery from that. As far as, you know, just spare time, I'm a voracious reader. I love reading books that are old, that have been around a while, that maybe have stood the test of time. I love getting out on my bicycle. I live here in Orange County, and most of the year it's a nice place to ride around. We've got beaches nearby. I love to visit those as well.
In case you just tuned in, I have Alan Fadling on the phone with me. He's the author of An Unhurried Life, Following Jesus' Rhythm of Work and Rest. It's by Ivy Press, and you can purchase multiple copies for your friends, family, small group, your church at ivypress.com. I'm about three quarters, halfway through this book. I absolutely highly recommend it. I think every Christian should be reading it this summer. Come on, team. Let's get together and slow down our pace of life, the demands, and let's get in balance with Jesus's rhythm of work and rest. And, Alan, I wanted to go through some of your background just to inform our listeners of who you are and the work you're involved in, because it's a real transition to start slowing down, especially when you've been addicted to being hurried, to being productive, to being, if you will, kind of doing a lot of things so people can say, wow, look at, he must be being used of God. Look at all he's doing. What were some of those lessons that you learned right away?
Well, I'll tell you, one of the things that became an absolute lifeline and has continued to be for the last 20-some years is the practice of setting aside a day or a part of a day once a month, just to step away from all of the work of my life and all of the other engagements of my life, just to be in God's presence for no other reason than to be in God's presence. You know, originally, I was doing this because I was a part of a community who practiced this rhythm. And my experience over time has been that, you know, gratefully, there have been more and more books written on the Christian practice of solitude and silence, and more Christian leaders are seeing the value, at least affirming the value. But what we came to find is that it's very hard to practice. It's easy to read about and to affirm, but boy, building that practice into life is a great challenge. And so, but thankfully, I was a part of a community that helped me build that rhythm in. And so I've sought for the last 20-some years to set aside such a day. And one of the reasons I find it so hard, and I think perhaps others do as well, is that I have a tendency to measure my identity by the things I accomplish or by what others say about me I'm accumulating. And these were sort of categories that, you know, Henry Nouwen mentioned as cultural ways in which we establish our identity. But as long as my identity is rooted in all the what I do and what people say and what I possess, then if I stop doing, then my identity takes a hit. And so I have to do more, and I have to do more, and I have to do more even to establish and to hold my identity level. what I began to realize is there came a point where I couldn't do enough to keep feeling like I was valuable, important, wanted, whatever. And it was in those places of quiet that I began to hear the voice of unconditional love, the voice of a father who would say to his son at the baptism, "You are my beloved son. I'm so pleased with you." Hmm. And would say it when Jesus had yet to do a thing, hadn't healed anyone to our knowledge, at least the gospel story, hadn't preached a sermon yet, hadn't done much travel yet. Before he begins his work, he's beloved. And that has been the voice I continue to hear and hear again through those practices of solitude and silence, simply to be in God's presence for no other reason than that.
Hmm. The book is called An Unhurried Life, Following Jesus' Rhythm of Work and Rest. It's published by InterVarsity Press. We have a lot of friends at InterVarsity Press, and you can purchase multiple copies of this book at ivpress.com, ivpress.com. And you can also find out more about the ministry work that Alan's involved in at spiritualleadership.com, spiritualleadership.com. Tomorrow we'll spend the whole broadcast talking about this great book that I highly recommend for everyone. Here's some of the chapters: A Frantic Life, An Unhurried Apprentice, Productivity, Unhurried Isn't Lazy, Temptation, Unhurried Enough to Resist, Unhurried Enough to Care, Unhurried Enough to Pray. Gosh, I'm reading kind of quickly. I don't know if I'm very hurried right now. I'm pretty excited about this book, and I want so many of our listeners to purchase a copy because I know how God is using it in my life. And so if you can stay with me, Alan, we're going to have you for the Tuesday edition of Mark and Friends talk more about how God can use this book in all of our lives. And I hope that I can glean some more truths and points of application so that I can slow down, follow Jesus's rhythm and rest, and then work more effectively by abiding in him through those times of unhurriedness, through those times of quiet solitude. So thank you, Alan, for being available on this, the Monday edition of Mark and Friends.
Absolutely. It's been a lot of fun.
Well, thanks for listening, everyone. Thanks for being a part of this radio listening family. This is Mark Burns with the Ministry of Great News Radio. God bless you, and have a great day and night.